This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 28th of July 2023. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 28th of July. Your readers today are Nikki Baring.
Hello.
Norma York.
Hello.
And today, for the first time, Clive Boot.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. The main headlines this week: new hospital to miss target, options spelled out in for junction, and master plan for 1,000 new homes. So, Nikki, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
Which is new hospital to miss target, and is a picture of maybe the future Conservative MP Flick Drummond and of the hospital in Winchester. The construction of a new hospital for Hampshire will be delayed until the 2030s, according to a new report, which said the government will miss its target to build 40 new hospitals by 2030. Basingstoke is one of eight hospitals in cohort 4 of the government's new hospital programme to be delayed until after 2030, despite government promises. A new hospital will affect the future services at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester. The news was revealed in a report from the National Audit Office, NAO, which said that the government will fail to deliver 40 new hospitals by 2030, as promised when it announced a £3.7 billion funding package in 2020. Meon Valley MP Flick Drummond recently heard an update on the government's new hospital programme. The subject is controversial in Winchester, as a new hospital would see major changes at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester. There are fears that the A&E unit would be downgraded and other services moved to Basingstoke. Senior consultants have warned publicly for many years that there are not enough specialist staff to retain existing services at the RHCH and the new hospital. Mrs. Drummond also met new hospital's minister, Lord Markham, to discuss timescales for the new hospital. She said, "I was impressed with the design and detail of the new hospital that will use the latest technology to improve staff and patient experience. I have been supportive of the new hospital on this easily accessible site rather than a redevelopment of the North Hampshire Hospital in Basingstoke that would have been too far away for my constituents. Patients will have access to Art of Art facilities along with ample parking and excellent transport links," the MP added. "I would have thought that would be state-of-the-art facilities, but never mind. Funding at the £800 million to build Basingstoke's new hospital was announced in May by Health Secretary Steve Barclay. A public consultation due to take place in January 2021 to help decide between two shortlisted locations has still not been held. The two potential sites are land off Junction 7 of the M3 or, less likely, the current site at Basingstoke Hospital."
Options spelled out for junction. Hampshire County Council has delivered on its promise to improve the safety of the notorious junction while long-term changes are considered. At the Cart and Horses Junction in Kingsworthy, the give way signs at the end of London Road have been changed to stop. Warning signs reading "new layout ahead" have also been installed on the approach to the junction. The interim changes follow the first public information event on potential major developments to the accident black spot. More than 100 people attended the exhibition at Worthy's Jubilee Hall last week, with the transport team there to explain the two proposed long-term options. Design 1 includes two roundabouts with a toucan crossing, signal control crossing for people walking and cycling, on the southern A33 approach. Construction is estimated to take 9 to 13 months and cost £5.4 million. Option 2 would see a signalised junction with toucan crossings on both approaches of the A33 and London Road. This would approximately take 6 to 9 months and cost £3.9 million. Although there would be a smaller construction footprint, there would be a higher maintenance cost and worse delays and capacity issues than option one. Option two does, however, provide more protection for the pedestrians and cyclists and risk fewer trees being removed. Vernon Tottle, 70, from Itchen Abyss, attended the event. He said, "Whatever design the road ends up with is probably won't be able to manage the extra amount of traffic when the A34 gets clogged up, but anything is better than what we've got now. The current layout is very dangerous because it's not clear who has the right of way. Decades ago, there was a stop sign which caused huge tailbacks, but quite safe. I prefer a roundabout because people would have to slow down." Mark and Jane Wheeler from Abbotsworthy were in disagreement over the two proposals. Mrs. Wheeler said, "My preferred option is the traffic signals and making it obvious. They need to keep it simple as possible. This is a massively positive step as something needs to be done before more people die." Mr. Wheeler said, "A lot of problem is that people bombing down the road. With a roundabout, it would slow people down. The proposed improvements would work in conjunction with the M3 Junction 9 improvement, which, if approved, will impact traffic around the junction." And there's a couple of pictures. One is of the said round junction at the Cart and Horses. And then there's a picture of the proposed plans all laid out on whiteboards.
A master plan for 1,000 new homes. A developer has released its vision for major developments on the edge of Winchester. Bloor Homes has unveiled a master plan for South Winchester Golf Course, with plans for a park and a ride, a primary school, a tennis facility, and a large country park. The master plan shows there will be 1,000 homes and that half the site will be retained as green space. The 170-acre site, to be called Manor Parks, is not currently earmarked for housing, so will be looking to be included in Winchester's emerging local plan. It's on the Strategic Housing and Employment Land Availability Assessment, which is a developer's wish list. On the latest version, the site capacity was given as 1,034 homes. Bloor Homes acquired the freehold of the golf course in 2021, but reached an agreement with the previous owners, Crown Golf, that the club will be allowed to remain open until at least 2026. James Matcham, Strategic Land Director at Bloor Homes, said, "We're excited to unveil our vision for the South Winchester Golf Course, known as Manor Parks. Manor Farm is the historic name of the area, which later became the South Winchester Golf Course. Many of the features of the farm, such as the distinctive topography, the wetland areas, and the tree groups, were retained within the golf course design. We would like to maintain the memory of the farm in the name of the new neighbourhood, but we will also retain these distinctive features in the design of the new community. Although the design of the new neighbourhood is at a very early stage, it is clear that parkland will be a defining feature. We feel that our plans for a low-carbon community, including 40% affordable housing, a new primary school, community tennis facilities, park and ride, and local community hub match the vision of the emerging Winchester local plan. And we're hoping to work with the council to deliver much needed new homes in this logical, sustainable, and beautiful place." Bloor Homes is planning a series of themed webinar events over the coming months, the first of which was held last night after the Chronicle went to press. The golf club opened in the 1990s after it was previously Manor Farm. The historic farm buildings were incorporated into the club buildings.
There is a follow-up article to that. Growing concern over a 1,000 home master plan. Opposition is growing against plans for major development on the edge of Winchester. On Thursday, July the 20th, Bloor Homes unveiled a master plan for South Winchester Golf Course with plans for park and ride, a tennis facility and a large country park. A South Winchester Golf Club spokesman said, without even mentioning the infrastructure incapable of coping with 1,000 more homes in this area, this cannot be accepted. This is a vibrant and successful facility for the local community. It continues to raise hundreds of thousands for local charities and is good for the health and well-being of its 700 members and hundreds of guests and visitors. All three Winchester City councillors from the Badger Farm and Oliver's Battery Ward oppose the scheme. Conservative Jan Warwick said, "These latest plans for the South Winchester Golf Club site were unexpected. I understand Bloor Homes have an option on the golf course and the site is included in the Winchester City Council's Sheila document. But as club members had been reassured, we did not expect plans to be brought forward so early on. It's really important to understand if Councillor Porter intends to include this site in this year's revised Winchester City Council local plan. Clearly, with the plans for the nearby Bushfield camp moving at a pace, more development here will heap pressure on the already congested road network, local biodiversity and healthcare services. I will work with my fellow councillors to oppose these plans." Councillor Adrian Brophy, a Liberal Democrat who was elected in May, said, "I know Oliver's Battery residents are really concerned about Bloor Homes' intentions, and I'm with them on that. We do have extra protection because the site isn't in the current local plan." Councillor Jackie Porter and the Liberal Democrat Cabinet also decided that it shouldn't be in the draft of the new local plan that was put out for consultation as recently as last November. This proposal might be Bloor Homes' plan, but it's not the Council's plan. Councillor David Kirkby, Chairman of Oliver's Battery Parish Council, said, "As far as Oliver's Battery Parish Council is aware, this site is not going to be included in the emerging local plan." The golf club opened in the mid-1990s on land that was previously Manor Farm. Now that concludes the headlines. Now we continue with the death announcements, Christian comment, letters to the editor, Chronicle comment, first person and Belgarum. So we start with the death announcements. Deaths announced this week. Buckingham, Jill Buckingham, died at home on the 25th of June, aged 82. Budgeon, Karen Budgeon, née Jutner, who died on the 11th of July, aged 94. Edwards, Anne Marie Edwards, died peacefully on the 3rd of July, aged 91, and was a well-known writer and local broadcaster, and presented New Forest Walks series on the Radio Solent in the 1980s. Knight, Paul Lawrence Knight, who died on the 13th of July after a long illness, aged 77. And now, Clive, I think you have Christian comment, please.
Christian comment. Hidden Treasure in Unexpected Places by Rosemary A. Baker. I'm not sure when it happened, when I retired or during lockdown, but I found myself watching TV programs such as Bargain Hunt and Flog It. I've always had a fascination with the antique roadshow, especially when people discover that something found in the attic was worth thousands of pounds. As children, my father had often prepared car treasure hunts to occupy us on days out with our grandparents. It certainly taught us to observe nature and to look out for local historical features. My sister still uses treasure trails as a way of exploring on holidays in this country. This last week, I have prepared another written service with a reflection due for this coming Sunday, the 30th. The Gospel is from Matthew and concerns some of the parables Jesus told the disciples to help them understand what God's kingdom was like. One of these illustrations has always been a favourite of mine because the words are sung in a hymn about the great love of God. It is called The Pearl of Great Price. It tells of a merchant who comes across a really special pearl and goes to sell all his possessions so he can buy it and own it himself. Jesus is trying to tell the disciples how much the kingdom is worth. Sometimes, though, like the disciples, we don't know where to find it. This year, the new president and vice president of the Methodist Church have chosen as their theme, buried treasure. This struck a chord with me. Talking about their theme, they say the treasure they are referring to is to be found in unexpected places, sometimes in other people, or even deep within ourselves, if we allow time to look for it. As I prepare my service about finding the kingdom of God, I asked various people what they understood about it. I was greeted by blank looks or else frank admission of not having a clue. If I wasn't already a psychiatrist, it might have been suggested that I should see one. I understood Jesus' difficulty in explaining to his disciples and why he stuck to using parables and illustrations. The idea of buried treasure to be found in unexpected people or else within ourselves seems still to be appropriate today.
Thank you, Clive. Now we move on to letters to the editor. Nikki, you've got the first, I think.
And this is from Sue Webb, headed Verge Dangers. Rewilding is all very well, and it's nice to see flowers by our roadsides, but it comes at a price. Road signs are obscured by overgrown foliage, and motorists are prevented from seeing clearly at junctions and roundabouts due to very long grasses and other plants. There has to be a compromise, or there will be some bad accidents. Surely it would be possible to clear just a few feet next to the road so that sight lines are improved and dangers removed. And this from Sue Webb, Quarry Road, St Giles Hill, Winchester.
And this is from Keith Hatter, Blind Decision. As a blind individual without Winchester Ticket Office, I would be excluded from independent rail travel. My computer's software does not enable me to purchase tickets online. Using a touchscreen automatic ticket dispenser at a station is not difficult for me, it's impossible. If a station has only peripatetic staff, I would not be able to find and identify them. Recently, I returned from Chichester at about 4 p.m. There was only one member of staff on duty for the entire afternoon, and his shift finished at 4 p.m. Fortunately, the person who gave me a lift to the station found him, but it took her, a full, able person, about 10 minutes to do so. As there is an intensive service through Chichester with, on average, trains every 10 minutes in each direction, a ticket office is usually prominently situated and can be easily located by sight and sounds. The 2010 Equality Act requires providers of services to make reasonable adjustments to avoid discrimination against those in one of the five protected categories, one of which is disability. Clearly, there is reasonable adjustment to a rail system devoid of staff ticket offices, because it really already exists, i.e. one with staffed ticket offices. It has been stated that passengers could buy tickets on a train from the guard or a train manager. But again, it seems fairly obvious that there is a danger that these roles will disappear. And as I said, that was from Keith Hatter of Arthur Road, Hyde.
This is a letter from Olive Bramley of Northbrook, Mishdever. Sunday Charges. I regularly attend the 8 a.m. Sunday service in the cathedral and am appalled at the new parking charges in Colebrook Street car park. After querying the new charges with Winchester City Council, I was told that my thoughts were correct. I arrive at 7:40 a.m. to buy my ticket and get to the cathedral in time for the 8 a.m. service. I will now have to pay £3.30 from 7:40 a.m. until 8 a.m. and a further £1.80 from 8 a.m. until 8:40 a.m. A total cost of £5.10 for an hour's parking. With the cost of living crisis that we are all facing, I think this new charging scheme is grossly unfair, unreasonable, and will result in less giving to the cathedral. I would definitely need to continue praying to God, as it seems He is my last hope, there being no common sense or joined-up thinking in the council. I was told I could park in Chesil Street car park for free. However, if you have difficulty walking but do not qualify for a blue badge, it is an awful long way to walk for a person of my age. I am continually frustrated with the lack of good use of our money that we give to Winchester City Council. It would be great if, for example, some were spent on cleaning the public toilets. They are disgraceful considering Winchester's wealth. I know this letter probably won't make any difference, but I just wanted to air my views. I feel very strongly that the council are ruining the beautiful city I was born in. And that, as I said earlier, was a letter from Olive Bramley, Northbrook, Mishdever.
And it's from Tim Fell, headed Withdrawal Closure. Your July 20th report about the proposed diversion of Andover Road North through Kings Barton overlooks another consequence: the effect on the other north-south route parallel to the Andover Road, namely Priors Dean / Berwick Avenue. We live 100 metres north of the junction between Berwick Avenue and Stony Lane, and there have been 5 collisions at the junction this year that have required the police and ambulance service. If the plan goes to close the Andover Road North goes ahead, traffic on this road will and accidents at this junction will inevitably increase and before long lead to the necessity to install traffic lights and or a roundabout, which would presumably require compulsory purchase orders on some of the neighbouring properties. I understand why the County Council made the Kings Barton development conditional on the closure of Andover Road North, remaining open only for residents and buses, but circumstances change and traffic flows change and will change further if and when a Winchester North park and ride is introduced. But surely it is glaringly obvious that the County Council, as the Highways Authority, must now recognise those changes and withdraw the condition it placed on the development and allow Andover Road North to stay open. And that from Tim Fell, Berwick Avenue, Week.
High risk plans. Despite well-argued public opposition to Winchester City Council's latest proposals for station approach, the council's cabinet has rubber-stamped a paper from officers seeking approval to spend a further £295,000 on a concept master plan, chronicled July the 20th. This is a high-risk strategy. The council has already spent excess of $5 million on this project since it first emerged in 2015 and achieved nothing. Circumstances have changed for the worse since the current council resurrected plans, and it's still not demonstrated a real demand for new office space. As others have highlighted, there is a good deal of empty office space available in Winchester. There is much more in Basingstoke, which has better transport links. The idea that the economy is suddenly going to take off in 2024-25 and there will be a boom in demand for new commercial property is ludicrously optimistic. That Network Rail has pulled out of the project suggests that the major players in urban regeneration elsewhere does not have confidence in its viability, at least as far as the land is owned. WCC appears to be more interested in new long-term initiatives than delivering on existing schemes. There is talk of making Station Approach a place that people will want to linger in rather than pass through. But surely the purpose of a central Winchester regeneration is to enhance the city centre and make it even more the go-to destination. Visitors who arrive by train want to visit the key historic sites, not the traffic-heavy main arteries around Carfax. I haven't found anything in the council's latest report that indicates that it is a solution to the constant polluting traffic flows there. New commercial development would just make this worse. Until the council recognises what is happening in the real world, it is wasting council taxpayers' money in pressing ahead with the current scheme. It needs to think again. And that was from Martin Holmes, Culverwell Gardens, Winchester.
This is a letter from Sue Halloway, Care Home. Your readers may have been made aware of the proposed closure of Bishop's Waltham House Care Home. This is the most unkind decision I have heard of. Not only will it be terrible for the residents who don't have money for private health care, but most of whom are from the village and whose relatives also live there. In addition, the staff also live locally. Apparently, they will not lose their jobs. Hardly a comfort when the nearest similar care homes are in the New Forest and Waterlooville, and the staff fit their work around schools and other duties. This really is a case of putting money before people. Is this what the Conservative Hampshire County Council really want for their elderly and infirm constituents? So it would seem. And that letter from Sue Halloway, Lower Chase Road, Swanmore.
Thank you. That concludes the letters. And now we have an editorial comment, please, Nikki.
Which is headed Bloor Homes and South Winchester. It was only a matter of time. Bloor Homes had bought South Winchester Golf Club in 2021. A developer, its purpose in life is building houses, not running golf courses. So the announcement of their plans for 1,000 homes on the course comes as no surprise. They have done something similar in Basingstoke. The initial reaction for many people would be one of shock. They may point to Barton Farm, aka Kings Barton, and the construction of 2,000 homes and say, why does Winchester need any more houses? Up to a point, they would be right. Winchester has more than enough land earmarked for housing to last many years. But planning never stays still. It is always looking 10, 20, 30 years down the line. The fact remains that the population of the UK is growing, and with it the demand for housing. Immigration makes up part of that, although overstated. The real reasons are we are living longer, more people are getting divorced, and more people want to live in the south than the north. Planners will be looking at South Winchester Golf Club and weighing up whether it needs whether it meets the needs for not the forthcoming local plan, but the one after that stretches well into the 2040s.
Thank you. Now we have first person, I think a rather grumpy report this time, Norma.
What is it like getting old? And this is by George Hayter. If I was someone else and I met me, I would hesitate to strike up a conversation. I'm 71, and I'm afraid my sagging facial features give me a grim look which puts people off. I know this because of mirrors. Occasionally, I'm scared by a glimpse of a boring old man before I realise it's me in the mirror. I try to compensate for my grumpy old appearance by acting cheery and young. Some compensations for being alive a long time is that I have memories similar to historical film footage. For example, when I was a child, the milkman delivered our daily 3 pints by horse and cart. Our black and white telly had a screen not much bigger than a paperback, and it only had one channel. Trains were hauled by steam. Most motorists wanted to indicate intention to turn and make hand signals. There was no M3 to London, and the express route from Winchester to Bournemouth meandered through Hursley, Ampfield and Romsey. Speedy Winchester Bypass was a rare dual carriageway, but it was still famous for summer queues at its traffic lights. When the Wessex Hotel, now Mercure, opened, it was considered daringly modern. The wealthy drove from miles around to dine amid its luxury and to feast on the cathedral outlook. Although war was over, Britain seemed less happy and less healthy than now. Smoke was everywhere, and women, gay people and radical minorities were treated less fairly. I've always been unduly concerned with age. When I was 25, when I detected my first wrinkle, just a slight crease in the forehead, now past 70, I suppose I really am in the waiting room for death. Lots to do in the waiting room, though. Waiting implies inactivity, but volunteering, part-time work, learning skills and can make it a pretty similar to not being in the waiting room. I once saw a shock item on TV which suggested that people in retirement homes think about their death every single day. Well, I'm not even in a retirement home and I think about death about every day. But that's not a morbid in the way that the programme suggested. When you probably have a few years left alive, it's natural that you will think of your death when considering everything from savings strategy to planning the few remaining annual holidays. What can you expect? Paris once? Edinburgh twice more? I always review my personal longevity forecast when an obituary features in the news bulletin. They always include the celebrity's age. The main distinguishing feature of an increasing proportion of my friends these days is that they're either obese, ill, or dead. In any pub or crowded space, I often find myself checking if I'm the oldest there. For many years now, any event since about 1990 has seemed to me just like the other day. Age is sapping my brain, and weak memory is becoming an embarrassment. When I made an eye appointment, I forgot which optician it was, and I had to ring round them all to ask. Deterioration is making steady progress on my body. I can still run upstairs, but the blue veins decorate my hairless legs and hair sprouts from my ears. Undimmed so far is my thirst for learning. I used to think I was enthusiastic for knowledge so that I could be better equipped to succeed or impress. But with a little time remaining to succeed or impress, I realised that all along I just plain enjoyed learning. I'm hardly qualified to advise, but if a young person asks for lifetime tips, I say, don't lie or harm anyone if you can help it. I would add... Don't drink much and don't smoke. Save loads and don't waste money on cars. Be adventurous, but pay great attention to safety and health. Oh, poor thing, only 71.
Well, hopefully Belgarum's offering is a little lighter than that, Clive. You've got a couple of items.
I hope it is. Here's a couple of items. A big thanks to host families. The City Council have held an event celebrating Winchester residents who have hosted Ukrainian refugees. Held at Winchester College, the event was attended by more than 100 people across 60 host families. Live entertainment was provided by the Ukrainian choir, an accordion player, Volodymyr Vasilensko, and choreographer Anna Panitova. Since the beginning of the war in Ukraine, more than 250 families have made their way to the district, living with hosts as part of the government's Home for Ukraine scheme. City Council leader Martin Todd said, "We all remember when the horrifying news came through from Ukraine at the end of February in 2022. And here, locally, many of us gathered in Abbey Gardens the following day to say, Winchester stands with Ukraine. And I know those words still stand true. Winchester stands with Ukraine. But I also know that while many of us have said it, there are some of us who have lived it, who have done more than any of us can imagine to make that commitment real. We are intensely grateful for the example you have set for our city and our community, and the support you have provided to our cities and districts' Ukrainian guests." The second article concerns play area opening for school holidays. A play area in Kingsworthy has finally reopened, but is still without its highly anticipated play tower. After being hit with a series of problems, Eversley Park reopened the refurbished playground in Loder Close this week. In a statement, the parish council said, "Work has now been completed and the park reopened. We will provide an update on the proposed tower installation once a date has been selected. We are aiming to keep the rest of the play area open while these installation works take place to minimise the disruption to parishes." The play tower was approved at the end of May despite concern over its height, but is still yet to be set up.
Thank you. Now we move on to the announcements and what's on this week. A couple of items. From the 3rd to the 6th of August, Wickham Festival is on. There's 4 days of music, arts and live entertainment. If you want more details on that, then it's www.wickhamfestival.co.uk. And I do know that Midge-Ure is headlining the festival. And on Thursdays, right through until October, between 12:30 and 1:30 p.m., the lunchtime concerts by Perfect Pitch, and they're held at St Cross Hospital Chapel. Next Thursday, the 3rd of August, the concert will feature the Amici String Ensemble. So for more information on that, you can telephone the St Cross Hospital 01962 878 218. That's 01962 878 218. Now, lighting up time ends Friday the 28th of July at 5:24 a.m. and begins at 8:58 p.m. On Wednesday the 2nd of August, it ends at 5:31 a.m. and begins at 8:51 p.m. And if you know someone who's sight impaired and would like to receive our free recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please contact us on 01962 861229. That's 861229, and that number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. And now we continue with further items of general news. Nikki, please.
And this one headed Bumper Crop of New Tenants for Council Estate. Hampshire County Council has welcomed another bumper crop of new tenants to its farm estate over the last 6 months, helping more people to take the first step in their farming career. Unlike other councils, Hampshire is committed to retaining its farm estate to allow newcomers to get on the farming ladder. Councillor Russell Oppenheimer, County Council Executive Member for Countryside and Regulatory Services, said, "Farming plays a vitally important role in our economy and is also crucial for our landscape and environment here in Hampshire. Our farmers continue to experience a tough operating environment with price increases and unpredictable weather patterns posing challenges. The County Council is proud to offer an affordable start for those seeking to farm in their own right. I'm delighted that over the last 6 months we welcomed a further 5 new tenants, as former occupants have retired or moved on to their own enterprises. In total, over the last 18 months, we've been able to offer a record number of 10 farm tenancies to a talented crop of farmers. Collectively, it is fantastic to see that all our tenants are delivering impressive results through their enterprise and hard work, including great quality produce and positive environmental contributions, such as improved soil health and thriving wildlife habitats." This week, the Council published its annual newsletter on its county farm estate, which comprises more than 30 farms across some 4,600 acres of land and is one of the larger providers of council farm tenancies in the country. The new tenants are Lower Branwich Farm, Chilling Fareham, an arable farm managed by James Burns; Tynefield Farm, Titchfield, a livestock farm managed by Flavin Obiero; Hazley Farm in Mattingley near Hook, a dairy farm managed by Courtney Watts and Rhiannon Fitch, who are due to take up a tenancy soon; Annott Farm in Lockerley near Rumsey, a livestock farm managed by Emma Hunt; Copps Farm in Kingsworthy, Winchester, a livestock farm managed by Alice King and Billy Taylor. And there's a wonderful picture of Flavian Obiero squatting there with the most wonderful smile, and a sheepdog. You know how they flatten themselves and stare tensely, and he's staring through his legs at 2 half-grown pigs that are definitely having a munch of something in a trough. But the intensity of the sheepdog is wonderful.
Chronicle to hold Open Day as part of Heritage Festival. If you have a question for the editor or simply want to meet the team, then here's your chance. The Hampshire Chronicle is holding an Open Day as part of Winchester's Heritage Open Days. The newspaper was produced in a listed building in Winchester City Centre and has strong links with Winchester, reporting on news and events for more than 250 years. The Hampshire Chronicle took part in the annual Heritage Open Days for the first time last year as part of its 250th anniversary celebrations. Editor Kimberly Barber said, "The Open Day was a great success with streams of people coming in to see us. We felt the Heritage Open Days initiative was a perfect way to hold our Open Day and at the same time add to an excellent scheme that really adds to the Winchester's vibrancy. There are lots of other events on the city that week, so I encourage everyone to have a look at the things on offer and perhaps tie in a visit to the Chronicle. The Hampshire Chronicle Open Day will take place from 10 a.m. until midday on Friday, September the 15th at 5 Upper Brook Street in Winchester." And there is a picture of the 4 members of staff with Kimberly Barber. I always thought that newsrooms would be absolutely teeming with people, but they're not. So come and see for yourself.
Now, top marks for a private school. A Kingsworthy private school has been celebrating its recent ICI inspection. Princess Mead School, which celebrates its 75th anniversary next year, was highly praised for both its academic and pastoral achievements by inspectors in May. The report said, "Pupils expressed confidence in their own abilities and talents, feeling happy to be themselves and confident with others within the family ethos of the school. Inspectors were impressed that the pupils achieved high academic standards and are successful in entrance assessments to senior schools with competitive entrance criteria, a significant number of pupils gaining scholarships. They also praised Princess Mead's contribution to the local community, stating that the pupils look forward to and enjoy the opportunities to help the local communities. Situated in the Itchen Valley countryside, the inspectors also highlighted how much the pupils greatly appreciate the ambiance and the beauty of the natural environment. Adam King, who joined Princess Mead as headmaster last September, said, "I'm very proud of the team at Princess Mead and of what we have achieved. You can't get any better accolade than double excellence at inspection, and I'm heartened by the wonderful comments we receive from parents as part of the process."
Fog linked to tragic M3 death of a young boy. A boy who brought joy to his family died after a, quote, tragic accident on the M3 on Boxing Day, in which the family car hit a virgin fog, an inquest heard. Alfie Mario Aiello da Cruz, 11, died on the southbound side of the motorway near Winchester on the evening of December the 26th, 2021. He was travelling home to Fair Oak from Basingstoke with his family when the crash happened. The inquest, held at Winchester Coroner's Court on July the 19th, heard how Alfie, who was a backseat passenger in the car driven by his father, Marco da Cruz, was thrown through the window. Giving evidence, PC Robert Giles said the Nissan Qashqai, driven by Mr. da Cruz, went along the mouth of the exit slipway and into the grass verge. The car was launched into the air after hitting the verge. Alfie was partially ejected from the vehicle as it rolled. Although there were no witnesses to the crash, fellow M3 drivers reported there being patchy fog along the highway that evening. This was not deemed a significant factor in Alfie's death. PC Giles said the fog was not sufficiently thick to obscure the road signs, but it is likely that it made the junction seem further away. No defects were identified in the vehicle. Dr. Samantha Holden, consultant paediatric pathologist at Southampton General Hospital, said Alfie suffered several injuries. She said he suffered a significant head injury and multiple other injuries, but added his death would have been very rapid. Area coroner Rosamond Rhodes Kemp described Alfie's death as a tragic accident. She said after hitting the verge, the car impacted the barrier, causing it to roll with some force. Alfie, who was a passenger in the back seat, was ejected through the window and was outside the car as it rolled. Tragically, he suffered fatal injuries due to blunt force trauma to his head, and impact would have been immediate. Mr. da Cruz, who is an experienced driver, and the road conditions were not an issue. It's quite possible the fog played a role in this. It is a tragic accident that occurred and is the cause of Alfie's death. A family tribute issued by police said, "Our beloved Alfie, we were so lucky to have you in our lives, giving us brightness, joy, love and happiness. Now that you have been taken away from us so suddenly and at such a young age, just 11 years old, we are going to miss you forever."
Unlikely venue for Feast of Family Fun. Winchester Cathedral is inviting families to join them for a summer adventure with activities and entertainments for all ages. From an outdoor theatre performance in historic surroundings to creative workshops, tours and an interactive trail, the cathedral team is hoping to give visitors a memorable day out. 5 activities to do at Winchester Cathedral over the summer holidays are the Summer Trail. The Summer Trail allows guests to step back into time and discover medieval queens, deep divers, pilgrims and hidden creatures. Maps are available for £2 from the welcome desk, and trailblazers can leave with a sticker and a pencil. The event is open from now until Monday, August the 21st, and is recommended for children aged between 7 to 11. And there are craft workshops for the creative kid. Craft workshops with fun and educational hands-on activities will be running throughout August, from Tudors to Victorians. Children will be able to create their souvenirs to take home from the hour-long sessions. Each week has a different theme and stories to end the workshop. Pre-booking is essential. Workshops are held in the cathedral's undercroft mostly suitable for children aged 3 to 11, spaces from £5 per person. Then there's family tours. Summer family tours are also on throughout August. Families can embark on a tour of Winchester Cathedral designed especially for children and families, with fascinating facts and staff on hand to answer any questions. Pre-booking is essential, as the tours are best suited for children aged 5 and above. £10 per adult and children go free. Kings and Scribes Exhibition. Available all year round and including in general admission tickets is the Kings and Scribes Exhibition, providing a journey through more than 1,000 years of history. Visitors can learn more about the lives of Anglo-Saxon kings and discover the role of the cathedral. The interactive exhibition is suitable for all ages and a popular rainy day activity. The Cathedral Cafe, with both outdoor and indoor seating, and a gift shop are both open daily from 9:30 a.m. till 5 p.m. Families are also welcome to join the cathedral services, where worship is free for all ages. Children may particularly enjoy the evensong services, where they can listen to the choirs singing. For more information or to book any of the above, go to winchestercathedral.org/UK/event/summer family fun.
This is a poppy appeal where help is needed. The Royal British Legion is appealing for new volunteers to help run its annual poppy appeal in Hampshire to raise vital funds to help veterans, current serving personnel and their families who have served and sacrificed for their country. The charity, which organises the poppy appeal every autumn, relies on more than 3,500 dedicated volunteers to help deliver the appeal across the UK each year. The Royal British Legion's poppy appeal was first held in the aftermath of the First World War in 1921, where red silk poppies were sold, raising over £106,000. This year, remembrance poppies have been given a makeover and will now be completely plastic-free and easily recycled. The new poppies will be sold alongside stock of the original poppy. The Royal British Legion says all volunteers will be fully trained, and the role can help people develop skills such as public speaking and building confidence, and will allow you to make new friends and be part of a national appeal. In the year to September 2022, people in the armed forces community in Hampshire have received more than 450 grants from Royal British Legion, totalling more than £340,000, to help with everything from housing, the cost of living, help with their mobility and getting back to work.
City tour and trip to the pub for ill-fated monarch. The modern-day King Charles I had a memorable day visiting Winchester's landmarks. Historical interpreter Daniel Williams, also known as King Charles I, arrived in the city on Sunday, July the 23rd, as part of his nationwide tour. The regal actor from Sutton Coalfield started at the Westgate Museum, where he felt much at home, surrounded by exhibits from the 17th century and giving a royal wave from an upstairs window to tourists below. General Manager of Winchester City Museum and Westgate Museum, Paige Beggs, was tasked with keeping the King on track and walking him around the city's historical highlights from the Cathedral to the Great Hall. To take a break from all the meet and greet, the former ruler, who was executed in 1649, stopped off at the 16th century half-timbered pub, the Eclipse Inn, where he was warmly welcomed. Charles I interpreter Daniel, 49, said, "I shall definitely be back in Winchester soon. I loved every second. Who knows, I may even bring my other creation, King Charles II Restored, to come and see his boot on display at the Westgate Museum." There's a magnificent picture of him outside the Westgate Museum, which again is wonderful with all the flint walls and the stoning and the paving. Very old feeling to it. And he's there with his gold-topped cane, his stockings, very good turn of leg, I have to say, boots with large silver roses on them, a swirling red cape, wonderful brooches, badges, and, of course, the black hat with the big feather plume. He's magnificent. Oh, and the beard and moustache.
Celebration of our humanity. Hundreds of musicians came together inside Winchester Cathedral to bring Refuge Week to a close. Members from community choirs across the district joined Ukrainian singers to perform for the packed cathedral. The concert aimed to bring people together to celebrate their shared humanity through music. Classical music was mixed with pop, traditional Ukrainian folk dancing, Bill Withers' Lean On Me, Louis Armstrong, and more throughout the 90-minute show. The whole audience join in with the original song You're Not Alone, written by director Neil Valentine with Hampshire teenagers for the event. So many families came to join in that the rows and rows of extra chairs were added to seat the crowds on the sunny afternoon of Saturday, June the 24th. A spokesperson for Winchester City of Sanctuary said, Sing for Sanctuary was an opportunity to bring our community together during the Refuge Week of 2023 to celebrate people seeking sanctuary, to stand in solidarity with them and to counter the hostile narrative we often hear about from politicians and in the press. We want to see people seeking sanctuary treated with respect, dignity and compassion. And Sing for Sanctuary was an opportunity to show compassion in action, to awareness raised locally about how important providing sanctuary is. The event was coordinated by the Cathedral, Beth Flint of Winchester City of Sanctuary, and Neil Valentine and Vicky Feldwick from the Winchester University Music Centre. Mr. Valentine said, We are delighted with how this event came together. 200 people making music together with packed audience in an incredible building like the cathedral is in celebration of our shared humanity is incredible. With choir members aged 7 to 77, Sing for Sanctuary showed how the communities of Winchester and Hampshire come together to celebrate through music. Reverend Tess Kewin Lawton, the Canon Missioner at Winchester Cathedral, said, The end of Refuge Week was a time for everyone to come together in their cathedral to celebrate our common humanity and many creative talents of refugees and asylum seekers. And there is a lovely picture of the Ukrainian choir with their beautiful floral headdresses singing their hearts out.
CBeebies at Zoo Fun Days. Marwell Zoo will welcome 3 CBeebies favourites over the summer with special Thursday fun days. Bluey and her little sister Bingo from the children's TV show Bluey will be visiting the zoo on July 27, August 10 and August 24. Meanwhile, the titular star of Hey Doogie is taking a break from running the Squirrel Club to visit Marwell on August the 3rd and August the 17th. Visitors will be able to join the playful characters for storytime sessions at intervals throughout the day. The characters will have a dedicated appearance area on the back lawn of Marwell Hall to ensure as many guests as possible can see them on a first-come, first-served basis. Nikki Cole, the senior events manager, said, We couldn't be more excited about welcoming Bluey, Bingo and Hey Doogie for our Thursday fun days over the summer holidays. We just know you and your little ones are going to love seeing your favourite TV stars and joining in all the fun at the zoo with us. Tickets for the Thursday fun days have gone on sale from the start of this week.
Riverbank show celebrates end of school year. The much-loved characters of Toad, Badger, Ratty and Mole have taken over at Sparsholt C of E Primary School. To celebrate the end of a successful year, Year 6 Oak Class led an enchanting summer outdoor production of the classic The Wind in the Willows. The school field was magically transformed into the Wildwood, the Riverbank and Mole End, brought to life with a vintage rowing boat, a bright canary yellow caravan, and the highlight of the show, a 1934 Aston Martin. Every pupil in the highly creative production took part, with Willow Class as ducks, Beach Class performed a wonderful frog chorus dance, and Rowan Class as wild wooders and stoats. Maple Class performed a remarkable dance as a car, inspired by the song Driving in My Car by Madness. The stage was brimming over with talented singers, dancers and actors. Our outdoor production was certainly lots of fun this year. Deputy Head Teacher Jane Gwilliam said, "I can't think of a better way to spend some time on the riverbank messing about on boats." And there's a wonderful photograph of a whole lot of, I suppose, that year six Oak Class dressed up, the yellow caravan behind them with flowers, and all in the different, there's the rat and the toad and the policeman, and there's everything, and they look like they've had the best time. Well done, school, Sparsholt Primary.
Was in a flap at Helicopter Plan. The owner of a luxury home in Hampshire Village is facing fierce opposition to his bid for unrestricted use of his garden helipad. Myers Carla's property, the Three Gables, set in 3 acres of land with its own 30-foot pool house, already has planning permission for a helipad. Restrictions on its use were imposed by Winchester City Council to protect nearby neighbours in Durley. Mr. Carla was allowed 2 personal use round trips per month between 8 a.m. and 6 p.m. But now he wants unrestricted use, allowing for irregular visits by his clients. Some 15 objections have been made, with concerned neighbours saying the noise coming from the helicopter would be detrimental to the welfare of animals and residents. An officer from the council's environmental health team warns they cannot in any circumstances support allowing unrestricted use. They said removal of this condition could have a significant increase in the frequency of such use, private and business, as well as occurrences at more antisocial times. This is our view, as the potential for a significant increase in the resultant noise impacts during pre- and post-flight noise whilst on the ground as localised in-flight noise. One resident, Louise Humphreys, said, "The property is surrounded by fields used for cows and horses, and it's also next door to a farm. Helicopters coming and going at all times of the day and night will spook and stress the animals." She added, "There is already an airfield in Durley, one at Upham and Southampton Airport close by, so why can't the applicant use these?" Another resident, Gabrielle Rapini, said, "I fully object with the withdrawal of conditions for the use of the helicopter. The uses has changed from private use to use for clients, which is a commercial enterprise. The noise pollution coming from unrestricted use of the helicopter would be detrimental to the welfare of both animals and residents in the village. Durley Parish Council has also objected to the plans." It said, "Durley Parish Council agreed that an objection would be made to the removal of this condition. We would not want to disturb residents' tranquility by allowing additional noise 24 hours a day. A decision has not yet been made by Winchester City Council." And there is a picture of, I presume it's the 30-foot pool house with acres around it.
Three keyless cars were stolen on the same night. Three keyless cars stolen from Hampshire villagers during the same night, and Winchester police are investigating the incidents to see if they are linked. A Lexus GS300 was stolen from an address in Brickmakers Road, Colden Common, sometime between 8 p.m. on Wednesday, July 19, and 5 a.m. on Thursday, July 19. A Ford Focus was stolen from a driveway in Little Corner, Deadmead, sometime between 11:30 p.m. on Wednesday, July 19, and 12:30 a.m. on Thursday. A Mercedes C43 AMG was stolen from Hack Drive, Caldon Common, at around 2:20 a.m. on Thursday, July 20th. Inquiries are ongoing and anyone with information should contact the police by calling 101 or online, quoting the relevant crime reference numbers. Winchester Police posted advice on Facebook following the spate of thefts. The post read, "Keyless car theft, also known as relay theft, is being seen across the country and the UK. Thieves are able to connect to the key's signal from outside the property to trick the car into unlocking and the ignition starting, and this is done with a device that doesn't need entry into the owner's home."
War veteran recalls career 70 years on. Today, July the 27th, marks 70 years since the armistice was signed at the end of the Korean War. The Royal British Legion has invited Korean War veterans and their families to Remembering Korea, 70 Years On, a commemorative event in London to acknowledge the service and sacrifices of this generation. Veterans from Hampshire will be going to the ceremony at Horse Guards Parade in Whitehall. They include Keith Webb, 92, from St Giles Hill, Winchester. Keith served in the Royal Electrical and Mechanical Engineers, REME, having been called up for national service in 1949. He deployed to Korea in November 1952 as a lieutenant and remained there until the end of the war, returning home in October. "We were so young and excited to go abroad. For us, it was an adventure." Keith initially joined the 10 Infantry Workshop, which performed second-line repairs such as replacing vehicle and tank engines. He later commanded the 29 Brigade Light Aid Detachment, a smaller unit responsible for first-line repairs and vehicle recovery operations for various regiments. Keith has vivid memories of the campaign. "The conditions in Korea were harsh, with extremely cold winters and monsoon weather in the summers. The noise of constant artillery fire was overwhelming. All who served in Korea will tell you of the extremely cold weather in the winter, with sometimes temperatures of 50 degrees below freezing overnight, and in contrast, the monsoon weather in the summer, when rain was followed by sunshine and such extreme humidity, evidenced by the mud roads becoming dusty again an hour or two after the torrential rain stopped. The countryside was barren in the winter, but the spring brought a riot of colour with purple azaleas everywhere," remembers Keith. Serving in Korea was a formative experience as it exposed him to new environments and cultures. While he was fortunate enough to avoid injury, Keith lost comrades, including those he had travelled with on the troop ship, and individuals lost during active operations. After the war, Keith developed the family firm, Webb's Country Foods, and continues to work in property and is president of the Wessex British Korean Veterans Association. Some 60,000 British soldiers saw active service in Korea, and 1,100 were killed, the highest death toll of a campaign since World War II, apart from Malaya, 1948-60. And it's a picture of a very young Keith Webb holding up an evidently dead snake in his full uniform for the war.
No comment, driver at cyclist inquest. A cyclist killed on a Hampshire country lane was hit by a car driven by a woman who refused to answer coroner's questions at the inquest. Oliver Gadney died on August 15, 2021, after he was hit by a Vauxhall Astra on the road known as Newton Lane between Barton Stacey and Newton Stacey, the inquest heard. The driver of the car, Alice Kitchen, was asked by Coroner Jason Pegg about the incident. However, on the advice of her legal representative, Miss Kitchen answered no comment to every question. Mr. Pegg said, "Are you going to answer no comment to all my questions?" And Miss Kitchen replied, "Yes." The coroner said that it was disrespectful to Mr. Gadnett's family attending the inquest. The inquest on Tuesday, July the 25th, at Winchester Coroner's Court, heard that Miss Kitchen was arrested after the collision on suspicion of death by careless driving and causing death by driving a vehicle whilst unlicensed or uninsured, but was released without charge. A post-mortem by consultant pathologist Dr. Adnam Al-Badri found the cause of death to be head injuries. Mr. Gadney of Greenacres, Barton Stacey, was described by as the nicest guy you could ever meet by Mark Wadey, who was cycling with him on the day he died. Mr. Wadey said, "He was a generous, genuine and funny guy. We went cycling together on a regular basis. He was a very safe rider who always erred on the side of caution." The inquest heard that Mr. Gadney and Mr. Wadey approached a sharp left-hand bend in the road. Mr. Wadey said, "Suddenly, the car was right there. I heard a loud bang behind me and saw Oliver catapulted over the bonnet. He was unresponsive, so I called 999. Miss Kitchen was breathalyzed at the scene, which came back negative. In a statement to the police after the incident, Miss Kitchen said that she had been a full driving license holder for about 3 months and that she had been driving at a speed which was appropriate for the conditions. However, when called to answer questions, she refused. A forensic collision investigation report concluded that neither Mr. Gadney nor Miss Kitchen had sufficient time to react. Mr. Pegg said, "Mr. Gadney was just 45 when he died, and he was a keen, frequent and experienced cyclist who was familiar with the road." The coroner gave the cause of death as road traffic collision and gave his condolences to the family. And there's a picture of Oliver Gadney sitting in his garden.
Here's a letter from Councillor Martin Todd, who is the leader of Winchester City Council. It's entitled Bushfield History. "Your recent Labour and Conservative correspondence have raised questions about the need for development at Bushfield Camp. As a result, it is probably useful to remind them how the decision was made that this site was needed for employment. When Labour and Conservative city councillors voted unanimously in March 2013 to require Winchester City Council to provide 20 hectares of employment land and required that those 20 hectares should be at Bushfield Camp, a decision that I and Liberal Democrat colleagues had opposed, they were in effect removing the ability for future administrations to oppose planning applications on those sites on the basis of need. That doesn't mean that the Lib Dems are taking the need assessment commissioned by the previous Conservative administration and backed by the Labour Party in 2013 as holy writ. We have commissioned a new study to give an update on the employment needs across the district. However, as your Conservative and Labour correspondents should also know, their party's decision to mandate the availability of Bushfield as an employment site is not one the City Council could reverse or oppose without agreeing a new local plan. While we are working on that, on the fastest practical timing, it is very unlikely to be available before a planning application for Bushfield is submitted to the City Council. In the meantime, I and my colleagues made it clear at the recent Cabinet meeting that the concerns I raised as long ago as 2009, particularly around traffic and the resulting scale of development, still need to be addressed during the assessment of the upcoming planning application. It would be useful if the Conservative and Labour parties were to focus on challenging the practical consequences of their decision in 2013, rather than raising theoretical questions that have made their own decision have made impossible to address. And that signed Councillor Martin Todd, leader Winchester City Council.
In a class of its own, primary school celebrates top rating. Barton Farm Primary Academy has been graded outstanding following its first inspection by Ofsted. Located on the King's Barton development, the new school was assessed in May. Part of the University of Winchester Academy Trust, it opened its doors during the COVID-19 pandemic. Inspectors commented that pupils love learning at Barton Farm Primary. They are enthusiastic and excited to share what they know and can do. Staff encourage pupils to be curious about the world around them. There are no limits placed on their learning. They are supported to be resilient, proud, kind and creative. The report continued, leaders have carefully considered the wider opportunities they want pupils to experience. This element of the school's work is special. Pupils talk confidently about their community involvement. This includes singing in a local care home and planning and hosting a community cafe event. Pupils understand their role as global citizens. Members of the Eco Committee know their voice is important in making change. They are proud that their letters to the local councillor resulted in more local litter bins. Head teacher Nicola Wells said, "I am delighted with the outcome of our first inspection. The report captures very accurately what we stand for and how much our pupils love learning. I am immensely proud of the wonderful team of staff who work tirelessly to make our school a happy and vibrant place to learn." And there's a just enchanting photograph of this school. They've all, the girls all have little mauve dresses and white socks, which seem to have a ruffle on them, but maybe not. I might be imagining it. The boys have white shirts and black shorts and their shoes and purple sweaters, so it's wonderful purple and mauve. And they're all, I guess primary is about 6 or 7 years old, I'm not sure. But they're very young, all smiling as could be. And the buildings, I have to say, lucky children. They're all light and airy and glass. And I have to say, it's a real credit to this Barton Farm Primary Academy.
A new men's fashion shop. A new branch of an independent menswear shop is coming soon to Winchester High Street. Suave Owl will be opening its doors this Saturday, July the 29th. The shop will stock an array of both formal and casual wear for men in a diverse range of sizes. It will be located at 17 High Street, Winchester, in the unit previously occupied by Shoe Shop Hotter. The company was founded in 2017 when Anthony Harvey and his wife Jessica, when they were planning for their wedding. While searching for wedding suits for a larger gentleman, Tony struggled to find something a little bit different to traditional groom's wear that worked for him. Based in the Southwest, Suave Owl has grown since its inception, moving from a small shop in a small town to a larger location in the city of Bath. Now, the shop's mission is to make men's style accessible to as many men as possible, bringing size-inclusive fashion to the southeastern Winchester. Anthony and Jessica said, "Winchester has such a rich history and there is such great community atmosphere. The scenery and the shopping are spectacular. We just knew it would be the perfect home for us. We're really excited to introduce Suave Owl to a whole new group of people. We're passionate about helping men to find great clothes that fit well and give an extra boost to self-confidence. Winchester doesn't know it yet, but they've missed us." More information about the brand can be found by visiting the Suave Owl website.
This is about a Winchester company that's been shortlisted for a national award celebrating startup businesses. Copy and TV, a consultancy team which specializes in creating behavior-shaping communications and training, has been announced as a finalist in the Startup of the Year category in the 7th Annual UK Social Mobility Awards. The winners of the award will be determined by an independent judging panel made up of leading figures from business, charity and the public sector, chaired by the Lord Lieutenant of London, Sir Kenneth Alisa, OBE. The winners will be announced at an all-in-person gala award ceremony at the Royal Lancaster Hotel in London on Thursday, October the 12th. Claire Hovey, the founder of Copy and TV, said, "We're immensely proud to be finalists for the Startup of the Year Award for our work with She's Worth It, working shops that take a new approach to women's financial well-being. Our course promotes bite-sized financial literacy and raises awareness of economic abuse, offering simple, achievable tools to support women experiencing financial pressures and homelessness, as well as survivors of crime and domestic or economic abuse. This will be Copy and TV's fifth award nomination in 12 months, including Creative Startup of the Year, Small Business of the Year, and Specialist Communication Agency of the Year."
Popular Pub unveils £1 million makeover. Following a three-month renovation, the Cart and Horses Pub has officially opened its doors. The Grade II listed building in Kingsworthy has been transformed with a £1 million refurbishment. The new interiors of the 250-year-old building will host up to 130 guests with cosy snugs, nooks and larger dining areas, in addition to al fresco dining options in the gardens and on-site parking with new electric vehicle charging points. The old coach house has been redesigned as a private dining area for up to 10 guests. The transformation has created more than 40 new jobs, and new general manager Ben Jones said, "We can't wait to see the pub come alive again, with everyone enjoying spending quality time with friends and family here." And there's a photograph of about 10 of the staff, all just young and smiling and happy, and the staff wearing black t-shirts and sort of beige aprons, and then there's the chef in his stripy apron, his hat, and obviously Ben Jones in the middle, hoping for the best. Better watch out for that crossroads, though.
Greta statue on the move. A controversial statue of Greta Thunberg has been moved from outside the University of Winchester's West Down Centre. The Chronicle has heard that the statue, which is entitled Make a Difference, has been removed from its position near Romsey Road after it became a target for antisocial behaviour. It will be reinstalled in the courtyard of the building. The statue of the famous Swedish climate activist was unveiled by the university in 2021. It has faced criticism from students and members of the public alike, with some accusing the university of greenwashing. There was a further outcry among students when it was revealed that the statue cost the university £23,760. The University of Winchester spokesperson said, "The removal has taken place to provide a more stable plinth for the statue so it can be enjoyed for years to come." And there's a picture of poor old Greta lying on her back on a pallet and a great hole where she was stood before.
This is about Twyford Village Games, which was back this year with traditional races and sports day fun. Four teams, yellow, green, red and blue, representing the different areas of the village for the competition at Hunters Park. Each team had to endure races such as the Space Hopper Race, the Sack Race, the Egg and Spoon, the Relay, the Egg Throwing and the Catching and the Tug of War. The event was well organised, with Roger Walker from Experience Hampshire announcing all the races to the different age ranges. This year's winner were the blue team, with 196 points, beating reigning champions' red team's score of 162 points. The efforts of the whole village raised £2,100 from race donations and raffle entries, and this is for the Twyford Playgroup. Hayley Fitzhenry from the Bugle Inn said, "The whole event was a great success and we are looking forward to doing it again next year." And I've got three lovely photographs here, one with waving parents. I think they're parents, adults and children all happily waving. A splendid photograph of a tug and war, and at least four competitors, in the sack race. Gosh, do you remember the sack race?
Young music talent excel. Perfect Pitch concerts at St. Cross Hospital Chapel continue to provide a platform for young musicians, and eight students from St. Swithin School excelled in a varied programme on Thursday, June the 22nd. Celia Fletcher, Edith Lay, Claire Spearing, Sasha DeBont, Annabelle Josie, Emma Pang, Louise Patterson and Nina Papastati all performed with confidence and showed considerable musicianship. The appreciative audience enjoyed beautiful liquid tone in a Sarah Bond by Groveles for clarinet, ethereal and haunting violin from Szymanowski, excellent ensemble playing in a clarinet trio by Mendelssohn. Songs by Schumann and Schubert followed, featuring Annabelle Josie, whose clear and mature voice shows great promise. The Courante from J.S. Bach's Sixth Cello Suite worked well for clarinet, and Claire Spearing handled the acoustic very well, with unforced tone and good articulation. Five pieces for violin duo and piano by Shostakovich performed wonderfully and with great character by Louisa Patterson, Nina Papastati and Emma Pang brought to an end an excellent concert, confirming music at St. Swithin's is thriving. Perfect Pitch lunchtime concerts at St. Cross continue every Thursday at 12:30 p.m. until the end of October.
Royal treat for children this weekend. Children are in for a treat when beloved characters Sarah and Duck come to the Theatre Royal Winchester to celebrate two special birthdays. Sarah and Duck's Big Top Birthday tells the story of Sarah and her best friend Duck planning the ultimate circus-themed party to celebrate Scarf Lady's birthday with their friends, the Ribbon Sisters, the Shallots, Flamingo and John and Umbrella. However, not only is it Scarf Lady's birthday on stage this year, marks the 10th anniversary of the original BAFTA-winning CBBS show Sarah and Duck. Now brought to life in the same team behind the stage productions of Very Hungry Caterpillar Show and Twirly Whirl Woos Live, MEI Theatrical, who produced children's live theatre, Sarah and Duck's Big Top Birthday is packed with puppetry, storytelling and music, promising to be a celebration for the whole family. Sarah and Duck's Big Top Birthday will be at the Theatre Royal at Winchester on July the 28th and July the 29th at various times. For more information or to book tickets, visit the Theatre Royal Winchester website.
Scouts are heading off to a world jamboree. Scouts from Hampshire will be travelling to South Korea to attend the World Scout Jamboree next week. 36 lucky scouts will be living in a global scouting community where they will be able to share their culture and friendship with fellow scouts through accessing over 200 activities. The Jamboree will be held from Tuesday, August the 1st to Saturday, August the 12th. The festival, which is held every 4 years by a different host nation, will see scouts from 170 different countries uniting in South Korea this time. Hampshire's Unit 61 Assistant Unit Leader, Joseph Shippen, said, "Our preparation camps have been important for us as a unit to develop and prepare for 3 weeks of fun and adventure. Taking 36 young people halfway around the world is a big job. So it's important that we train the young people up in skills such as cooking and first aid, not only to prepare them for the jamboree, but as skills for life. And there's a wonderful photograph showing the scouts and their helpers with a blazing fire in the middle, and no doubt singing campfire songs.
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to all our editors for selecting the extracts and to the copying and memory stick preparation teams. And of course, thanks to our readers, Nikki Baring.
Goodbye.
Norma York.
Goodbye.
And Clive Boot.
Goodbye.
And from me, Keith Vincent, goodbye. And do have an enjoyable week. And when you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.